Hey everybody, this is Drew.
And it's Blake.
And you're listening to the Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Controllers podcast.
Welcome to episode 112. I forgot what episode we were. Before we get into the episode, I'm just going to go ahead and shoot through our little internet presence preamble. You can find us on all the big social medias, you know, just by searching the name of the podcast, the incredibly long name of the podcast. You can also email us at the2smokingcontrollers@gmail.com for any questions and comments and stuff like that. The main thing, though, that we're shooting for is you can follow us. We try to do it at least once a week. We're doing our Lock, Stock, and Three Smoke Controllers co-op endeavors streams. We try to do them at least once a week, sometimes twice. We are going through Dark Souls 2 at this time, so please come and join us for that. We're having a blast. That is with our podcast editor and cousin, Brian. He sucks at Dark Souls. We suck at Dark Souls. It's just a blast of how much we all are awful at Dark Souls.
This one's a little bit more of seeing how different 2 is than the other ones. I mean, we've played all of them, and Brian's more, you know, he's dabbled in Elden Ring and then played all of Dark Souls 3 with us. So I think I would, you know, talk to him about if you can feel the difference immediately. I mean, we are playing backwards, but like, there's a massive difference in the design and how it plays. I mean, we need to explain to him that it's the swarms of enemies and crap like that, and it's just clearly the B team for
software. It's not the Miyazaki.
Yeah, because he was making Bloodborne at the time.
Mm-hmm. And you can find us on that. It's Two Smoking Controllers. What was it? twitch.tv/2smokingcontrollers.
Mm-hmm.
Please come out and hang out with us while we're doing that. So that gives you a little behind the scenes when we actually record the episode. That's pretty cool.
I think so.
We also have a Lock, Stock store. We got koozies, beanies, a glorious pair of underwear, and we've updated some of the extra art with our 100 episode updated artwork. So there's, you know, you get old school and the new school stuff. So that's pretty cool. And all the links to everything is in the show notes. So you guys can just, you know, if you don't want to remember all this, just click more and click any one of those links down there, guys. Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to dive into our game.
Much smaller game this time around.
It's a much smaller game, yes. It is still a trek, nonetheless. But our game we're covering today is called Trek to Yomi. And it was put out originally on, you know, on the PlayStation and Xbox on May 5th of 2022. So it's a fairly new game.
Mm-hmm.
And then on January 30th of 23, it was put out on the Switch. It was ported over to the Switch about, you know, a little less than a year later. It is developed by Flying Wild Hog. They are a Polish game developer company based out of Warsaw. Actually, they're a surprisingly huge company, like for the amount of games they've put out versus the amount of people they have and stuff.
That's weird.
Because they have 3 locations in Poland.
Are there 3 locations strictly video game developers, or you said it?
As far as I can tell, yeah, it's 3 video games. They have their main studio in Warsaw, and then there are 2 other studios in Krakow and Rzeszów.
Krakow's?
Krakow.
Okay.
But that's funny, because that's actually Krakow is where the game we currently have on Gamefly, Observer, is based in. The KPD, Krakow Police Department. But it's the cyberpunk kind of version, but he's in Krakow.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. That's weird. Yeah.
It's kind of, yeah, I thought that was strange when I was going through. I was like, oh, that's, you know, everything's connected. It's such a weird thing.
I wonder if that developer, I think that's...
They're Polish as well.
Polish as well, probably. Why would they put their... I mean, I guess you can put your game in any town you want to, but why would a, you know, developer pick a random Polish town unless that's where they're from, maybe?
Yeah. They've been around since 2009. They've made 10 games, and they have 330 employees between the three locations.
That's big for something that nobody's really heard of. What other games that we, have we played any of their games?
We've played a few of them. They're responsible for the revitalization of Shadow Warrior 1, 2, and 3.
That's all three? They did all three of them?
They did all three.
We haven't played three yet. We did 1 and 2.
They also have a couple other things. One called Hard Reset. It's their first game, and it's like a it's a cyberpunk style game. It's a third person shooter, and it's like you get to you customize with your augments and stuff like that. And then a couple years later, they did a Redux version for the next gen console because it came out on PS4 or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard of it.
Actually, I think it came out. Actually, I think the original was like 360 PS3, and then they with the Redux they put it on the next gen at that time with some added in, increments. But they've also have another one called Juju, and it's a platformer from back on the PS3 and 360 days as well. And then more recently, they have it's called Evil West, and it's like a
Evil West is being talked about right now.
And they did that. Evil West is
it just hit Game Pass.
And they have another game that's about to come out called Space Punks.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of posts about Evil West right now because
it looked kind of cool.
It literally just hit Game Pass, so
it looked kind of cool.
Yeah, looks neat. None of these games, you can tell, are from the same developer.
Yeah, exactly. No.
They're just all over the place.
All over the place. They're bonkers.
It's crazy.
Now,
that's probably a lot more fun than the poor teams, the big teams that get stuck making the same game every year. It's got to be so lame compared to the folks that get to literally just make an entirely different game every time.
Anytime they want. Yeah, they just kind of like, oh, what are we doing today, guys? Whatever we want.
We played Trek to Yomi. I mean, besides like Japanese aspects, like this has nothing in common with... Shadow Warrior.
No, nothing.
Not even completely different. If you didn't tell me it was the same developer, I would have never
completely known. Different play styles and
that's a first person action for melee shooter.
Bloody, this is, gory mess.
Yeah, this is a 2D side scrolling thing, a completely different aesthetic, you know. That Shadow Warrior's goofy, this is very serious. It's completely different. Yeah. It's really, really cool. I'm not sure the style of Evil West. Evil West is clearly a Western game of some sort.
This is something we try to talk about when it happens, because it is cool when something like this happens. The studio, Flying Wild Hog, did have their own in-house engine called the Roadhog Engine, and it came with their very first game, which was called Hard Reset. Now, I'm dumb, and I don't fully understand specs when I look at it, so I don't really know the difference, but I do know that they maintained it all the way until the beginning of 2022. So that's, you know, that's quite a couple of years from 09 to 22 of using their own in-house engine. They did retire it for the use of the Unreal Engine, which they did use for their next three games, which was Shadow Warrior 3, Evil West, Space Punks, and Trek to Yomi. They're the next four games, rather. So I do think that's pretty cool. Like I know that it does cost a lot of money for them to do that, and so maybe they were just trying to cut some financial corners. Like if they can just, it's cheaper to do this, because they pulled a, I guess a big brain move. I guess is the only thing I can think to call it. But in March of 2019, so 10 years after they've been in business, March 2019, they acquired an investment firm called Supernova Capital. And so they allowed them to just focus on making games instead of having to beg, going around begging publishers and doing this and doing a bunch of Kickstarters. They somehow had enough income to purchase an investment company, and they now use the profits from the investment company to make games and stuff, so they ain't got to worry about asking people, which is how they're able to afford having 330 employees, three separate locations all over Poland. One cool thing, though, is the Supernova Capital. The it was ran by a gentleman. Hold on, I have his name here. I didn't write his name down. I couldn't remember. But he is the former CEO of another company called Splash Damage. And
I've heard of Splash Damage.
Yeah, Splash Damage. He's just the former CEO. He doesn't work there anymore. But he was a former CEO of Splash Damage. And when I look into Splash Damage, just out of blatant curiosity, they're responsible for literally just doing a bunch of, I can't even think of the word, but it's just a multiplayer. Anytime a game had multiplayer tacked on,
they were
the ones that did it. Like, I'm talking all sort of Doom 3 multiplayer, Batman Arkham Origins multiplayer, Gears of War 4 multiplayer, Gears of War 5 multiplayer. They did do Gears Tactics, and there's a bunch of games like that where they tacked on the multiplayer. Return to Castle Wolfenstein tacked on multiplayer. They specifically handled the multiplayer aspects of a lot of these. Like,
it's irritating.
It's super strange.
Did they have any original Splash? I mean, this isn't really that their podcast, but
the only ones is there was one called Brink, which is that time traveling. No. Brink's that one that was like the multi-class shooter with the different things.
Had a lot of hype and then flopped immediately.
Yeah. And Gears Tactics. Okay. They do have two upcoming things. One's called Transformers Reactivate, and the other one's just called Codename Project Astrid. But they're just
clearly a code name.
Just a TBA at the moment. They don't have any information on. But it's kind of cool that was all connected and stuff like that. But the fact that they had enough income and stuff like that to purchase this company, and now they're just like, we got money. We don't need people. We do whatever we want.
I guess I'm making multiplayer things for people who got at least a paycheck.
Yeah, but the guy who owned. Supernova Capital was just the former CEO of Splash Damage, so I thought that was kind of cool. So you probably saw, like, video games make boatloads of money. So let's hop on that. But having them, they bought them people in 2019, which is kind of crazy. So they did it so they could have financial security and focus on making video games, was specifically why they did that. Mm-hmm. And then in 2020, they got bought by a company called Embracer Group. But when I look into
Embracer is a dirty word.
It is
in the industry. Yeah, they buy things and close them immediately.
That's really weird, because when I looked into Embracer Group, they're owned by Nordic, THQ Nordic.
I thought Embracer Group's bigger than that.
Mostly
Embracer is known for buying crap and dissolving teams.
They're a Embracer Group is bought. It's a Nordic Games or whatever holding company. So they're owned by Nordic Games, and they use them as a holding company to help all these weird financial things that games do. But Embracer Group is owned by Nordic.
I wonder if Embracer's okay. This sounds like we're not going to get into this really more. But Embracer has a really bad reputation.
I don't want to look into all
but
that.
But Nordic, THQ Nordic, has a really good reputation. So I wonder if they're using Embracer as the name to do their dirty work now.
It's possible.
Because THQ Nordic's saving people, and Embracer Group buys and destroys people.
I didn't know anything about that when I read that, but Embracer Group bought them, and Embracer Group, when I looked into them, Embracer Group's parent company is a THQ. It classified them as, hold on, let me pull it back up again, because I lost the
words. Sure, it's the same Nordic, because it's THQ Nordic. It would be THQ Nordic.
Hold on, I'm going to look at it one more time, because I'm an idiot. It was... And this is too much to write down, so I'm having to bounce through my stuff. Here you go. Hard Reset, Krakow, Splash Damage. The CEO was called Paul Wedgwood, who owned Splash Damage.
I don't know the guy's name, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But in November 2020, Embracer Group announced that they had acquired the company, which is Flying Wild Hog, through Croc Media, which was their parent company. But Embracer Group AB, formerly called Nordic Games Licensing, and THQ Nordic AB, a Swedish video game and media holding company. Hmm. So they were formerly called Nordic, and their license is a Nordic Gaming Group as of 2011. So they're attached to THQ very much so. Hmm. It's the public parent company that they allow people to buy stocks in while they keep a Nordic name private. Is that me? I don't know.
It sounds like some corporate dirty work.
Yeah,
what it sounds like.
I'm too stupid to understand what all that stuff means. But yeah.
Yeah, but Embracer is a dirty word in the industry's current capacity. past couple of years, I feel like I never see an article that mentions Embracer that's ever saying what a good thing they've done.
Oh, well. Yeah. Uh-oh. they're the good and the bad.
And the ugly.
But yeah, I just thought, like, again, I'm too stupid to understand, but I do think that's cool for people who might want to look further into that. Mm-hmm. Because there's corruption everywhere. Yay! But I don't want to get in too much more into that because I am dumb and I don't fully understand it. I do, and I will, talk about... Oh, I got to pull that screenshot up. Okay. The director of the game is a gentleman named Leonard Menchari. Mm-hmm. And he's directed a couple of things, mostly shorts. But one of the big things he did was a short in 2011, which was a YouTube thing you could watch for Half-Life, and it was called The Singularity Caller. And it was like this whole little like story about Half-Life that got him some notoriety mm-hmm. in the video game community, and then other people have reached out to him since then to direct video games. And he's done one called Riot Civil Unrest, another one called Neo Dusk, an interactive short story, and then The Eternal Castle, and then Trek to Yomi is his latest thing he's directed.
All those games or those other stuff?
Those are all games. He's done some other like actual shorts, like live action. But then, I mean, the Half-Life one was a live action thing, but then the Riot, Neo Dusk, and Eternal Castle and Trek to Yomi are all video games he's done from 2017 to 2022. Maybe worth looking into. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
maybe. Except just maybe. He also co-wrote the story for Trek to Yomi. Mm-hmm. And his other writer is a gentleman named Alec Mir. And he's only done four things. I don't mean to make that sound derogatory, but he's done four things. He co-wrote Trek to Yomi. It says scripts and cinematics for Total War Warhammer 3, which came out in 2022 as well. And then in 21, something called Humankind, he did additional writing and backup writing. But the cool thing, this has been, I didn't write down what number episode it was, but he did do in-game short stories, the VO audio logs, the cinematics, as well as being the narrative writer for Returnal. That's the first thing he ever did, which is crazy.
Returnal? Yeah. I guess the writing is... Returnal's... We talked about it. And we kind of ended up hate, then kind of loving it, then kind of hating it, then loving it again.
Yeah.
The story's pretty confusing, but interesting. Definitely more interesting than anything else you just mentioned. Returnal story is more interesting like that. But Returnal's more about that gameplay. I got to play some more Returnal. On that road,
bought it and never beat it. And you're on the road.
Beat it, but you can keep playing. You keep playing infinitely, and eventually try to work your way towards the platinum. Still installed on my console. I just need to do a run, warm up, and do a run every now and then. I did that a couple of months ago, and I turned it on, and I was already in a run, and I ran through it and like beat the final boss. Like just ran through it again, and like picked it up cold. The gameplay is so clean. It feels kind of natural. The movement and stuff feels kind of natural. There's not very many games I can just kind of pick up and like. And I ran through, like, I was in whatever map I was on and like ran.
I think you were like on like the end.
Yeah, but I ran through and beat the final boss again. I was like, well, that was cool. But what I'm missing is like just randomly drop collectibles and crap to put together the final story to get the last key to see the true ending. It's a lot. The game can play forever because you kind of hope those collectibles drop.
This is very dependent on RNG. Yeah. But it does has a bit of a habit of trying to give you
the stuff you're missing.
Yeah.
That's a good game. But yeah. We should do a podcast on Returnal.
If you haven't played it, go play Returnal, people. It's great. And the game, it's Trek to Yomi, also has two composers, one of which named Yoko Honda. She's a little smaller. She's been worked on eight things. The only video game she's worked on is Bayonetta 3. Hmm. But she wrote a song called Payback, which maybe we can find somewhere, and that's been used like all over the place. People like in wrestling games and people's intros to the UFC, like live action UFC things. And she gets anytime it gets played, of course, she gets credit for it and money for it. But it's all over her. People using it for their intros in video games as well as in like the real world. Something called Payback. So maybe it's a pretty cool sounding song. I don't know.
No idea. Ryan, there's a quest for you to complete. See if you can find this. What song should be hard to find if it's popular?
It's popular. Yeah. It, relatively popular with like UFC and wrestling and stuff.
If it's,
like,
if it's really good, you can play the podcast out with it.
And the guy who did the lion's share of the work is a gentleman named Cody Matthew Johnson. And he's got himself quite a larger repertoire. Primarily some new stuff. He is he was the composer for Devil May Cry 5, the Contra Returns, that game called Bright Memory or Brightest Memory, something like that, which ends up being more of kind of a like a tech demo, I think it was. It was like the whole game was done by one dude, if I'm not mistaken, and then it kind of ends up just being like a really awesome tech demo of what this, you know, what he could do. And you can buy it for like $5. No, I think it's more than $5. If you're going to buy it, get it on sale for $5. Otherwise, I think it's like 20. But he's also done something called Synced, which came out in 23. And then there's another, I guess it's a gacha game or something like that, but it's called AFK Journey. And he's the composer for that. And he has something upcoming called Lost Soul Aside. And I don't know too much about that. All I know, you can find a trailer. But that's really about it without having to, like, let's see here. And then some of the other stuff he's worked on some wrestling games, some Hot Wheels games. He's worked on a couple of documentaries and stuff like that, which I think is kind of cool. But, oh, Brian might like this. He actually was the creative, nowhere to go. He did some of the music for MLB The Show 2018. I know how much Brian loves 2018, or not 2018, but loves MLB The Show. But the two really cool things that I think both me and Drew will appreciate, three things. He also did music producing and lyrics in Bayonetta 3, so he's worked with Yoko Honda before, which I think is kind of cool. But he wrote the lyrics and did the ending credits song for Resident Evil 2 called Saudade. Saudade, and he did the bass in that song as well as wrote the lyrics and was the musician for bass, and he wrote the lyrics, so that's kind of cool. So we just talked about that a couple episodes ago. And lastly, this is a show, and this show has a weird history. It's called Powers, PlayStation Network exclusive, based off of a comic book, and we only watched season one of it, but I always wanted to get back to it. But it was, but the reason I want to talk about it just briefly is because the TV show was like a weird concept. It was a PlayStation Network exclusive TV show called Powers.
We mentioned that before.
We've mentioned it before, but this guy, Cody Matthew Johnson, he did he was the composer for the entire show, all 20 episodes of it.
God, that's so long ago. I mean, there's no possible way I remember the music. I remember the violence of the show, but not so much the music.
Well, I use any excuse to praise Charlton Copley, because I love him, and he's the main character in that show. That kind of covers it for the music and, you know, all the kind of some of the behind-the-scenes things. And so I think we'll kind of dive into the game itself, which is would you call it a 2.5D side scroller? I think because you move back and forth in the.
I don't remember. Do you actively? I think you move into. Do you ever make a choice to go in or out? Because that's the difference between like Little Nightmares is 2.5D because you can run in and out the 2.5. I know you move in and out of the map, but I think the paths carry you.
You're very, very few times, because I remember I think it is entirely 2D, because like you'll go to a point where you walk all the way over to the left side of the screen, and you might find a hidden, like a room, a door to open, and you'll go into that room and it's still side screen. You walk back out, and then you just like click the up arrow, and then he switches to the next scene, but you're still
2D. Because I don't remember hitting up and down to move in and out of the field.
No, because even when you do combat, it's left and right combat.
Yeah, for sure.
There is no fighting.
So there's a bit of 2.5D illusion to it, maybe, because when you do move to the map, technically you're turning on a path, but you're still moving on a 2D plane.
So it's like it's a 2D with a trick,
a little bit of a visual trick, action adventure. There aren't really any puzzles. There's like the occasional really light puzzle, but it's mostly action adventure, fairly combat heavy. Samurai game.
Yeah. Before, yeah, I did want to mention, because I do like, I don't, I'm not going to deep dive on them, but the game was published by Devolver Digital, and they're responsible for helping a lot of pretty cool games come to.
Yeah, for a long time they had their own. They got to wait. They were kind of a nobody thing, and then they had their. Then they got big enough where they were their own little section at E3 for a while before E3 died. Yeah.
Well, just some of the games that they've helped put out.
Yeah, they're a publisher, so
they're just a publisher. But like some big ones lately is basically the entire Serious Sam franchise, Enter the Gungeon, Hotline Miami 1 and 2, and more recently that game Fall Guys.
Oh yeah,
that's made their big money. As well as Death's Door and Loop Hero. There's a couple of the ones sprinkled in there.
I'm interested in Death's Door. Of all the things you've listed, we played a little bit. We played Fall Guys like one night, me and you did. It's more irritating than anything. No, Fall Guys. We didn't play Fall Guys. What am I thinking of? Human Fall Flat. So that's a dumb game we played for one night. We didn't play any Fall Guys. Fall Guys is kind of, I think it's probably sputtering out, I feel like.
It says they do still try to help out indie studios. They still try to help out wherever they can. It says one of their earliest endeavors into helping independent developers was a game called Genital Jousting, which is available on Windows and the Mac OS in 2018. And it was developed by a company called Free Lives. But that was one of the earliest things. They also did Talos Principle.
Yeah, probably Talos Principle too.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about the publisher too much, but you know, they're out there. They are doing good work in helping independent studios. The game does have a fully English voice acting and fully Japanese voice acting.
Yeah.
Both you and I, I'm not saying, subs over dubs, bro, or anything like that. But in this particular instance, because it felt more genuine to the story.
The game is very Japanese.
Yeah, I listened to Japanese voiceover for this because you are in feudal era Japan, specifically the Edo period, and it's in Japan. They're going to speak Japanese in feudal era Japan. It's not going to be very Englishy. So it just made more sense to just listen to it in Japanese.
So I guess the striking thing about this game is it has this the black and white kind of realistic samurai movie aesthetic to it, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all in black and white for style. A lot of the mostly you're running through kind of like the levels are they're kind of like a diorama a little bit, but like they're each of them. I was saying when we were playing, like each part of this is like a picture, like parts of the maps you'll run through, and you can like stop. You like this could be a screenshot from a black and white samurai movie from the 50s, the 60s, and you go to the next screen. It's like this could be literally a screenshot from an old an old black and white samurai movie. It's like, but they did that because this is just the way it looks. It looks really, really genuine.
Okay, so I was,
especially for a non-Japanese company.
Oh yeah, they're Polish. I did take a brief glance here. So what it does is gameplay. It says gameplay regularly alternates between freeform exploration and then mini side-scrolling combat sessions. So you do get to roam around in like a 2.5 thing and kind of walk upstairs and walk downstairs, but any time in combat is side-scrolling. Because I remember you go into a building and you do have to like go upstairs and come downstairs. So it's a light 2.5D.
Yeah, it's not quite as much if you've played Little Nightmares. It's not It's not like that.
It does have... You have like two modes of like your combat. You have like the two different stances. There's like a fast stance where your sword's down, and then like a heavy stance where you walk around with your two handing your sword up, and depending on certain enemy types are weak to certain strikes, and the other.
You're more vulnerable to those strikes.
And then you got a bunch of other weapons. You got like not many, but you get like a bow and arrow, a bow shuriken, and then you get something called the Ozatsu. Which is just Japanese.
Is that the cannon?
Yeah, it's literally... Ozatsu is just the Japanese word for cannon.
Oh, really?
That's all it is. But it's a blunderbuss. It's a cannon.
Yeah. It's about the one... Because I probably threw a shuriken or two, and I shot the bow a couple of times, but, like, the cannon was, like, where it was at.
I mean, I would use both.
Yeah, it's good to get people that are, like, running at you to kind of, like, slow them down. And I think I might have spammed a bow and arrow on one of the bosses.
Yes, I think I did too.
We'll get to them. We're not going to do a play by play, but the one that had like multiple arms and all this, or was like, wah, and I'm like arrow, 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 arrow. Yeah.
I did that a couple of times because your shurikens were one hit kills. Bows were one hit kill, shuriken one hit kill.
Not for bosses.
Well, not for bosses, but basic enemies. And so sometimes
I did the I'm going to interrupt. I did the Indiana Jones thing where the guy come out with a spear and he's like, I'm going to freaking, whatever. He said a whole freaking like two or three lines and boom with the bow. And he just died. And I was like, well,
I did something for that. Similar, but it was like three dudes were bum rushing me and I pulled out the cannon and just blasted all three of them at once. And I just fell in love with the cannon immediately. It's got a really long reload time.
Really long reload time.
But you're going to blast some fools. The combat, though frustrating it could be, because you have to be precise and counter, and you know, you got to be paying attention. But it's not
a button mashing thing.
It was very, I won't say rock paper scissory, or anything, but it was close. Just because you had the high and the lows, and you had to kind of like, and I think they had a subtle glow about them, or maybe you just got used to like, because you had like light, heavy, and soldiers, and ones where, you know, you just kind of had to do that visual aspect of remembering.
Yeah, I think there was you did get more skills and stuff like that too. Mm-hmm. So I think there was like a shield breaking, because there was shielded guys at some points. So I think you can get around their shield with a shield break.
Yeah,
because was there a shield break? I think it was a shield break.
Well, there's a blocking, and then there was a thrusting mechanic. Yeah. You have your slice down, slice up, and a thrust, and thrusting then would, like, and
then
knock back.
If they're stunned, then you have a finisher.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we should kind of roll back a bit. We kind of dove right into the playing it. But you do play as a... You start off with him really young, because the story starts with him young and then jumps forward. But you are playing as Hiroki. I don't know his last name, unless Hiroki is his last name.
He's just called Hiroki.
He's Hiroki. And he's, you know, your tutorial training session is done with his master, Sanjuro. He's kind of teaching... He's a kid. And he's kind of teaching... It's kind of the game's teaching you the stances and how to... parry and stuff like that. Kind of a general, like, it's cool kind of
learning.
The first game where you've played as a samurai, probably learning from a master for your tutorial, but it's done well enough, and he teaches you different kinds of attacks. And you meet your little your love interest, sort of.
Your like childhood friend turned love interest later.
Aiko is actually Sanjuro's daughter. The game, like, there's story choices throughout. Mm-hmm. It's very strange how it's done. Like, you can follow a path where supposedly all you do is, like, I'm doing it for her, because, you know, she gets quote-unquote kidnapped or whatever she kidnapped, and you're given those, like, these three choices that, like, determine your ending or whatever, and you can, like, do the thing where he's just, it's all about her, or you can do it for, we'll talk about, like, revenge for the town, his town getting destroyed, which is going to happen. Spoilers, by the way, if you hadn't played Trek Naomi, but, like,
yes, big spoiler warning.
They
should have
just picked one, because one, the you don't spend enough time with her in the beginning for I feel like his character to be so dedicated to her that everything he does for the rest of this game is like just to get to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems more like he would be doing the revenge for his village plotline. Makes more sense. But that's like they just had that. We talked about this. Stop putting choices in games that don't need choices.
Yeah.
Like, just write a story.
Because to that, the game actually has three endings plus a special hidden ending.
Yeah.
And the choices are love, duty, and hatred. And now in chapter 3, there is a boss that you fight. That if you're supposed to, the story dictates that you're supposed to lose that fight. You can't actually win it, but they have a built-in thing that if people have understand the mechanics of the game enough and can actually beat it, it mm-hmm. does have a special ending that will end the game right there at chapter 3 instead of in chapter 7.
As long as you kill the guy who's causing all the problems.
If you actually kill him there, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of unlocks a different alternate ending, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. I could see people being, obviously, it's just a parry. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't good enough, but like somebody who gets a real handle on the parry system, you can parry all everything the bosses do.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So the game, the tutorial, you have the whole sequence as still a kid where the bandit attack happens on the town and you kind of run through. Hiroki as a kid has no problem killing people.
I mean,
He kind of stumbles over the first one.
He stumbles on the first one, and then he starts murking these bandits.
Yeah, he has a sword, and he just starts killing people. Like, the bandits are attacking, you got what you got to do.
You got to protect the women and the children, your village.
You start running into shrines here. Shrines are your healing, automatically heal you.
And your checkpoints.
And your save. They save your game for you. You will start seeing collectibles right away. I had a guide. I think I have a guide.
Used a TA guide, I'm pretty sure.
I think of a loose TA guide because I wasn't getting the 1K in this. We'll see how many achievements I got by the end of this. But I think that because of the multiple endings and stuff like that, I was like, I'm not playing this game three freaking times to see three endings that don't matter. But there are collectibles throughout everywhere. The problem with what this game does, and that when we kind of a lot of games make this mistake, is you'll have two different ways to go, and the game does not make it clear which way is the correct way and which way leads to a collectible. And nine times out of ten, when you go the correct way, it locks the way back, so you can't go back and get the collectible.
Yeah, so you got to be paying real.
That's really old, like some weird, like, games have gotten kind of past that kind of stuff, I feel like, in some cases. But, like, literally, you walk, drop off something, check the game checkpoint, and you've missed that collectible, because even trying to read where it's at, it's kind of really, really confusing and hard to do. So I didn't get all the collectibles.
I think I did. I think I got all the collectibles. But I said that it was a TA guide. We didn't do a TA guide. We followed a Neo Seeker.
Neo Seeker, yeah.
Because I'm looking at it now to make sure. And then these are the points, like, warning. Make sure you get all four of these collectibles before proceeding through the door. That is a point of no return. Mm-hmm. You know, so
I must have just been playing. I think it's one of those games that I played without a guide because I knew I wasn't going to get the 1K.
That's a possibility. Yeah, because let's go ahead and talk about that real quick. Why we didn't get the... Because it has two difficulty achievements. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, you know, the hardest difficulty achievement. And hold on, I actually have the difficulties right here. There's Kabuki, Bushido, Ronin, and Kensei. And the achievements are beating it on Ronin and beating it on Kensei. Ronin, of course, is...
Because Kensei one-hit kills?
I'm not entirely sure. Ronin, experienced players who like a challenge. It tests every aspect of combat and resources, and battle is an attrition. Kensei, after you complete any difficulty, it unlocks it, and it is one hit, one kill for everyone, you included.
Yeah.
As well as bosses. But, so, I'm not that good. So, there's that. And then there's... I'm sure if you were doing a Kensei run, because there is a achievement for every single boss in the game if you beat them without getting hit. So, you could probably compound those two.
Yeah, you get no choice. Does Kensei permadeath?
It doesn't say.
Yeah.
It just says it just says it's one hit, one kill. Doesn't say, like, it's like Iron Man.
Not Iron Man. That might not be too bad.
No. That's all combat, though. Imagine having to, you know, you'd have to get really
lucky if the game's checkpointing properly. You just get kind of...
You just have to get real good at it.
Okay, yeah. Huh. I'm not going back to it.
No.
But along with that, along with the collectibles, there are health upgrades, stamina upgrades. You have a stamina for your blocking and parrying, I think. I forget what it was. Is there a dodge?
Yeah, because you could dodge through their attack and appear behind them and do like a little backstab, critical hit.
And then there's capacity upgrades for the shuriken, bow, and cannon. So that stuff's all spread out throughout. And that stuff is everywhere. Sometimes hard to find because of... And I don't think the collectibles are lit up well. They're hard to spot sometimes in the black and white environments. I love the look of the game. And I'm not like a hoity-toity. It's cool because it's black and white. It's black and white, but then, like, the way it's designed and the lighting and stuff of it makes it look... You can tell a difference in things that are made to be black and white.
Oh, yeah.
And then things that just happen to be in black and white, you know? So it's kind of... Like, recently, like, Godzilla Minus One, they put out a black and white version. It's probably fine, but, like, the movie wasn't made to be in black and white.
Now,
we watched that Werewolf by Night, which was made to be in black and white. There's a lot of cool lighting tricks in Werewolf by Night that it was filmed to be in black and white.
And then, like, a year later, they
put it out with color.
Werewolf in color or whatever.
Yeah, it's stupid. But this here you can tell that, like, the way... But what it does is it kind of makes... When everything's black and white, and I think your collectibles have a little kind of a light, like a white sparkle to them on a black and white game, yeah. It's a little tough to find them sometimes.
And it kind of, like I said, you go through the first chapter, which is really just your tutorial and your kind of intro to the whole story, and you end up, like, the final part of it is you end up encountering the leader of these bandits,
yeah.
And your Sanjuro, your teacher, your master, protects you and ends up battling, and at the same time he and this bandit leader kill one another and they both die.
Kagiro, yeah. But you end up messing with him too, because I wrote here, like, you end up, because you do, like, fight him for a second and you disfigure him,
you, like, chop his nose off,
chop his nose clean off. So then and does that happen before Sanjuro shows up?
Sanjuro shows up, like, shortly after that,
yeah. And then they kill each other, well, quote unquote kill each other.
No, they do.
Isn't Kagiro? I'm wearing a spoiler in the game. Kagiro comes back.
Yeah, but he's dead. He died.
He's in the demon.
He died. He followed the same trick that you follow.
Okay,
but except for he chose revenge, so he got to come back. He explains that to you, that he's aware of what you're doing because he did the same thing.
Did anybody get that choice? I guess in that lore, he's kind of...
Depending on how you died, maybe. If you died with one of those three things.
It wasn't like natural causes or something.
If you died with, I guess, with
one of the, because there's a lot of dudes when you're in Yomi, a lot of soldiers,
and a lot of people who are like, you know, weaker soldiers who I guess failed the test and they became the. Well, okay. Speaking of that,
then we're jumping ahead. We gotta get to.
Okay, well, I'll talk about the enemy types when we get to Yomi here in a little bit, but that's kind of it for chapter one. Because there's seven chapters. I'm not going to do beat by beat for every chapter.
No, there's no point. It's a lot of running through maps, cutting folks is what it is. Yeah, and they get in the second half of the game is incredibly repetitive.
It's seven. Like I said, it's seven chapters. Mm-hmm. 1 through 3 is in the real world, and then 4 through 7 is in Yomi.
Mm-hmm.
With the part of chapter 7, coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it. Well, that sounds really, it does sound really cool in theory, but like 3 chapters of Yomi is
a little much.
It is like so repetitive, like crazy repetitive.
The game itself honestly is crazy repetitive, but the combat does keep pulling you through. And I did like reading the collectibles just because because they use the lore. They were, as far as my, again, because I'm stupid, but it's I have it here. Okay, they use the actual Shinto mythology that is related to Yomi, also called Yomi no Kuni, which is the land of the dead or world of darkness. And they dive into the mythos of it. Specifically, what it's called is Izanami's retreat. Mm-hmm. Izanami is like it's Izanami and Izanagi, and they're like the creators of the universe. And Izanami dies. She ends up dying, and she rests down in the underworld. But I'm not going to get to the whole thing because it's actually a really cool story in the way they go into the backstory of the mythology and everything. It looks like they definitely did their research.
Yeah,
because it talks about like the creation of some of the gods of like Amaterasu and Sasuno. But then, well, as she died, she was angry from the betrayal that caused her death, and so she was split into 6 parts: left arm, right arm, left leg, right leg, gut, heart, and brain. And each one became a different entity that rules over parts of Yomi. They were like the bellowing thunder, the howling thunder, the roaring thunder, the empty, they had a name. But it's also, the only one I can remember was like Fujin and Rajin.
Yeah.
And they were like demon guardians of the Yomi of specific aspects, and they judge people. It's like, because it's basically their version of hell, but it's got a redemptive arc. If you can go through the trials, you're allowed to be redeemed and go on. But they definitely did, because I could dive into it, but being ill educated in it as I am, it is really cool. And from what I've looked at, they did follow it incredibly closely with their mythos, and when they did the background with some of the collectibles and stuff like that, it's really cool to like read those.
Yeah, I skimmed them in the beginning, but I got tired of reading.
I read all of them because they actually intrigued me. I liked learning that stuff because this has nothing to do with the game, but I'm slightly jealous of stuff like that because we don't have anything.
American lore is boring.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Lore.
Yeah. It's not as cool as or interesting. Yeah. Frankly,
we don't have demons and cool history and crap like that.
No, we got Jesus Cristo.
Jesus Christ.
You know, but whatever. I just thought that was really cool. I liked learning about that because when it comes to mythologies and stuff like that, the main ones. Everyone knows is like Greek and Roman because it's easier to be fed to you, especially when you're younger, and it's kidified, of course. When you start reading some of the real stuff, you're like, oh, this isn't for kids at all. But then nowadays, because of a lot to do with Marvel specifically, is the Asgardian mythology with Odin and Loki and the like.
You mentioned it before on the podcast.
Yeah, but it was cool getting something else out of it, seeing a different mythos.
So. Back to the
game. Sorry, yeah, I thought that was cool, and yeah, I wanted to say that it is, if you're interested in that stuff,
yeah, read all the stuff.
It is really cool.
All the history of the, because it's like, the collectibles are like, I want to call them knickknacks, but it's like,
they're knickknacks for, you'll pick up a comb, or you'll pick up like a cracked jade, a tiger, but it is relevant to that piece of the mythology.
Yeah.
Like the comb was actually a gift from Izanagi to Izumi, and He used it to brush her hair, but then when she died and she went to the world of darkness, he took the comb, wrapped it in what was her hair, and used it as a mystical torch to light his way to her by following the flame as it pointed in her direction.
Pretty cool.
It was really cool, but I'm not going to get into it.
So we're back to, it's just the present day. You're still, you're always playing as Hiroki. I'm going to say you're always playing as Hiroki.
Mm-hmm.
I forget why, but he's heading off. He gets a crew. It's the same village. He's getting a crew to go. The bandits have started trouble somewhere in another town. So he's got a crew of his people, and they're going to go take care of the bandits before they cause any more trouble.
Before it becomes an issue.
Before it becomes an issue. You head out and go to the forest, and you get jumped, and his entire crew is captured immediately.
Yeah.
Like almost like two screens outside the village. They're all just like captured. I forget how he's not captured.
You'd be badass. That's really.
I don't remember what happened, but anyway, then you end up, you're by yourself as you trek your way across a couple of mats, a forest, mountain, mines, like this whole freaking thing, just to get to the village where the bandits are. I did write in here that somewhere around here, through all this trekking of all this stuff across all these maps, you should start to notice that every screen is a piece of art.
Yeah,
like the way that where they put the camera, the way they design the things, and the lighting and trees, and just everything about it as you're moving through, you're like screenshot, screenshot, screenshot,
it's
screenshot.
Gorgeous.
It's just like wow, they put a lot of work into this. But eventually, you do get to where the bandit town is, and you got you run into I wrote Sadatame
because
you see him multiple times. You see him here, and then he's in Yomi again later.
Yeah,
he's literally waiting for Hiroki to show up so he can kill all his friends in front of him.
Yeah, that's literally it.
Yeah, he waits there and he just kills all your people that got captured. He just kills them all in front of you.
Yeah, I have that right here at the very end of chapter 2. It's these they're all knelt down and they do point blank arrows to the back of everyone's head. He gives the command and they all like it's execution style but with bow and arrow point blank at the back of the head. It was pretty gnarly.
And yeah, the Sadatame fight, he uses a spear. I mean, fights are fights. We talk about how the combat system kind of is and stuff like that. But you fight them. There are spear guys are a little harder to fight.
Yeah,
they have the range. The range you don't have with a sword. You know,
you have to counter them or use your bows to.
Well, I don't think you have a bow. Right, you don't have the bow yet.
You might have like one katana, but because it's a boss fight, you can't kill them. But you can use the
shuriken, shurikens to slow them down. Yeah, because you get the bows coming up. I hear my notes. So when you beat him as he's dying, whatever, he tells you that all this was a distraction. All this was BS to distract you. So you got to run back to town, and that's what you find out. The rest of his bandits are already torched your hometown.
They've already bum rushed the stage, and they're taking no prisoners.
Yeah, and we'll find the bow and arrow is here somewhere. I forget really where exactly. You find the bow and arrow. I don't know about you. I wrote my notes here that I had the enemy AI break somewhere in throughout here. It kind of broke and then comes back together. I had a good large sections of this part where enemies were just standing in place. The game wouldn't freeze. They were just stand there, and I'm able to walk over and just like kill them. Yeah, it happened for a while. I had the enemy AI break around here. They just stood still and let me kill them. So then I moved on. As you move on through the town, It comes back, but I get to like the you got something about that?
Well, no, I had a cool moment here. I wrote down a specific line of dialogue that I thought was really weird because I love when stuff like this kind of happens in video games.
But you had no AI glitch though?
Not that I can interesting. But there's a moment. There's a bandit because they've set the entire thing on fire, and there's a bandit who has had one of the houses collapse on top of him, and he is calling out for mercy.
Oh, yeah.
For help.
I remember this. Yeah.
For help.
It's because you wrote the line down.
And Hiroki, the line he says is, you who are without mercy, now plead for it. And then walks away. Mm-hmm. he doesn't kill the guy. The dude's crushed under a burning building, and Hiroki would rather this dude burn alive under a crushed thing.
Yeah, you're Texas freaking town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're all hoity-toity when you're on the winning side of things.
Oh yeah, like well, you mean some maybe. Well, this also goes to like maybe like an honorable person, a more honorable person would have ceased his suffering, like stabbed him to the heart or decapitate him or something. But he just kind of resheathes his sword, scoffs, and walks away while this dude bleeds out and is burned alive. And I thought that was just a really that was a badass line. That was just a good moment and just really cool. And it kind of gives you more. Because he's not, like, he is an honorable man, but he's not above being petty in that particular moment. Yeah,
that's not petty.
That's not petty. That's just vengeance, which leads towards the different choices you can make.
Well, you don't make that choice. Yeah. That's a written thing, like it should have been. They should have wrote him to be a certain way and just stuck with their guns. A few other things I have here. There is a we've seen it in other video games. This has a arrow rain sequence.
Yes.
Where their enemies are shooting arrows from above you, and you got to run and hide under stuff and move. I always kind of, sometimes kind of like those. This one has, again, the art of this game lends a lot to see. We've seen lots of arrow rain sequences, but the way you move across the environment and the arrows come down, it looks really cool.
The thing I think you're forgetting to mention is you do have like those paper covers, and the arrows come through, but they're flaming arrows. So as they hit your environment, it starts to burn the environment, your cover away. So you have you have to move forward. So I did think that was a little cool moment.
Did you find the lady that hung herself instead of dealing with the bandits?
I probably did, but I didn't make note of it.
You move into the environment, you go to the house, and there's a lady who's hung herself, and there's one of the collectibles is nearby, and if you read it, it's because she didn't want to, like, she did not want to deal with, like,
what she's like, I'd rather, she's like, I don't want to be, you know,
I don't know what it is, but her thing was, like, didn't want to not cope with bandits, so she just hung herself, and that was really, really, really freaking dark.
She felt that was more honorable to go out like that than do whatever the bandits were 100% going to do to her.
Yeah. Because you do get the bow and arrow here. This is the part where I mentioned earlier, the spear guy who talks a big game. Then I wrote, spear guy talks a big game, then I shot him with an arrow, Indiana Jones style. Also mentioned shooting guys, and there's sequences where guys are on horses running back and forth across the screen hitting you. You can bow and arrow them right off their horses. Yeah. Feels pretty good.
That does feel really good. Mm-hmm. I felt like Ashitaka from Prince of Mononoke. Mm-hmm. Arrowing people off their bow. Yeah, that's kind of what it felt like.
You didn't have the cool demon strength.
Yeah, but it was still cool and shooting, you know.
So at the end of this, you got anything more before we get to the end of this sequence?
Not really.
So you get to the end, and I wrote variant nose guy is responsible for everything. So he actually, so he's already, at this point, he's already done his trick and come back for vengeance.
Yeah.
So he did die. So I guess I didn't put that together. He did already die, and this is years later. How many years from?
It's 10 or less. It's probably like 8, because you're not like a grown man, but you're like 20 maybe.
Yeah.
And as a kid, you're about 12.
Okay. So he's back, brought back to life, didn't get his nose back. He's still just ugly. He's got missing a nose. But he came back, literally did a whole trek just to come back to kill, destroy your village. It's all he cared about.
He wanted revenge specifically on you, though.
Yeah. So I wrote, he killed me immediately. Not sure if you can win this fight, since the next part of the story is about being dead. You said you can win the fight.
You can win the fight.
I'm not good enough. I say he literally like probably parried and killed me immediately.
But you can win the, you can beat that guy there, and it does show it does have a different ending.
Cool.
Now I didn't take much notes for chapter 4 because chapter 4 is literally just the intro to Yomi, and it's just kind of like, here you go.
I wish the Yomi, when we mentioned earlier, the Yomi stuff takes too long. I know it's about, the whole game is about and this game's not very long. I'll tell you my hours at the end of this. It just seemed like my notes for Yomi are pretty short too. Like I have less notes for Yomi than I do, because a lot of it's running through the same kind of spectral kind of environments, up and down rocky environments and stuff like that. It's a lot less interesting to look at than the screens were in the real world. It's less, I'm sure there's some artistic stuff in here. I remember just being like, run up the hills, fight these enemies, climb over this rock, fight these enemies, climb up here and fight these. Like, it gets real. And there's so much to this trek across Yomi. I get it that it's the point, but you run across and you get very little story sequences that really feel like you're getting anywhere to give you like a sense of progress across these sequences.
The end of, or about 2/3 of the way through chapter 4 is where you do get your cannon, though.
Yeah, I got that in here. So I got multiple things. You start fighting, the new thing is blighted enemies. They're basically zombies, but most of them still fight, just like soldiers. Mm-hmm. I did write down a pretty cool, do you remember the dam? And there's like a dam, and you break the dam, and it's a really cool-looking environmental kill. And there's the occasional not-too-common environmental kills in the game, but you can
trigger
them.
There's some fire ones.
And then you can cut a rope and drop some crap on some people. But I remember the dam one looked really cool, because you breaks the wood breaks, and all the water and thing comes down and
comes towards you.
Those guys.
I thought there was a pre-programmed one, like you kick down a tree, and it falls on like a guy who's sitting on the other side of like a ravine. It's a scripted event. You have to do it, but I remember that being kind of, you kick down the tree, kills the dude.
Also, right, you start fighting people who know Hiroki in Yomi. I think these are, they know who he is, and I think these are supposed to make him feel guilty for the people that failed, that died because of his...
That he failed them.
That he fell for the trick to go across the thing and yeah. come back. Or and even it could be some of the guys who got executed in front of him. So the, I you, think you it's end up, more, yeah. But they want to, they're stuck in revenge, and they don't have the willpower, I guess, to not be on revenge, so he gets to go through... And kill all, like, multiple... It's not like bosses. It's like little soldiers that know who Hiroki is. And then you just know a bunch of them. I don't know if they have
names. They're
all
like, your pride got the best of you. How could you fall for this trap?
So he's getting kind of berated as he's going through killing these different people. Then we get to the spider leg eggs, which are... I don't know. These are... They're supposed to be... They're creepy, but I don't understand their significance to Yomi.
Maybe, I don't know the full... I'm sure it was in the collectibles. I understood it then, but... That's a lot of stuff to just transpose entire.
It's just like these things. It's just the legs that like hit you. Remember that it's the eggs. If you get too close, the leg comes out and
hits you. I think you can hit him with your bow and arrow.
You can knock him down. I just didn't understand if they're just in here to look creepy, because they do. Like anything spidery in a creepy environment. So that's the spider leg eggs. Enemies with guns. I just sprint up to them, and if you sprint to them fast, you get to them and kill them, the better. Right around them, you'll probably get the Azutsu, the cannon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of flying through it now because the Yomi stuff is just whatever. This is where at some point one of the end chapter thing is the long haired two sword demon. I just shot. That's the one I just
Part of the story is
We
said spoiler alert. So if you haven't played Trek to Yomi, it's on you. You should play the game for hearing some of these spoilers. But the thing you're tracking down is called, it's the Banshee, and it's actually Eiko's spirit, because this is you find out that she died.
She did die.
Yeah,
I guess dude killed her.
Mm-hmm. Dude killed her, and this is her spirit. But you, if you kill it, you get to. She's like, oh, you can still make it out of here and avenge all of us and stuff like that. And so that's kind of the cool thing.
Yeah. Do you remember the kanji puzzles?
The
answers are kind of in the environment. There's like three of these, I think. Unnecessary
fluff. I do have that noted. Sort
of story significance to them.
I do have that noted here. Okay, yeah. Chapter 5 introduces puzzles. Why so late? I'd rather not have them at all. It's literally what my note says verbatim.
Yeah. Because they're not hard. Like, you can literally, the answers are on the screen that you're on.
Yeah, you just say, like, I could see maybe doing it once, but they do it like three or four times.
It's like three of them.
And it's just like, why?
Just to slow you down.
It's fluff. Because, like, well, it's funny to do that because the director of the game, Leonard Mancieri, even says that the whole point of the games is it's supposed to be like, he's like, it's a samurai epic, but he's like, the whole game is, you're supposed to be able to beat the game in 5 hours or less.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that's what we made the game for, so that you can play through this really cool samurai epic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, that makes perfect sense, you know, but if that's the whole point, why add the fluff in?
Yeah, I have no idea.
So I don't fully understand that, but yeah, I was like, I didn't...
Beyond that, there's new Spectre enemies. I forget their significance. I wrote down the Wraith because the Wraiths are the one that summon more enemies.
Yeah,
the Spectres. I don't have a note beside Spectre enemies.
To that note, this all starts in chapter 5. But the enemy types that are introduced is there's Spirit, Spectre, Wraith, and Shade.
I wrote Shade. I wrote Spectre enemy, no note. I forgot. So if you remember anything, Wraith enemy summons more enemies, irritating. Usually sprint to them, kill them as quick as possible. Then I wrote the Shade enemy, they teleport, and wrote annoying.
Because but they always teleport behind you.
Yeah.
You know, so that's like any time.
So the Spectre just like a basic ghosty soldier.
That's the Spirit. The Spirits were the basic, and the Spectres were the ones that had weapons. Whether they used a gun or used a sword, they were Spectre. Cool. If I think. It's been a little bit, so I apologize, but yeah. I do want to also talk about, because you do open up a bunch of doors throughout the game, but there's not a single door that he opens like a normal person. He always combat kicks every door open without fail. He rears up and
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, he's got to have some flair, but he hammer kicks or axe kicks when your heel comes down, so he just like forward just kicks open every door he comes to just to announce his presence and then start murking folk. And I think that was definitely worth noting. And then I think, do you have anything else you want to add about the chapter 5?
I'm assuming if I wrote it here, this chapter ends with you run into the demon version of Sadatame, mm-hmm. the spear guy who you killed earlier. I didn't write anything besides kill him again. I guess it's exactly the same fight again.
I think it's the exact same fight. So
yeah,
like
he didn't even got it like a demon form or nothing. You just can really just fight him again.
Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where his will was strong enough that he held his form.
Held his who he was.
Didn't
gain any additional power, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And then, is it in that chapter or is it the next chapter where they start doing those puzzles that's the balance, duty, loyalty, courage, and
I don't remember. My next note is boat puzzle. What's the boat puzzle?
I don't know.
Is that the one where you have to run across and hit the rope and then the water comes in? You got to run across the boat before.
Oh, yeah. Before you have to, like, because it raises the water level.
Yeah. Another random.
Is that chapter 5 or chapter 6?
I don't have chapters written down. I have it after the Sadatame fight.
Yeah. Because this whole chapter 5, all the collectibles for chapter 5 are the ones that go through the.
More of a spiritual lore.
Yeah. The Great Thunder, the Howling Thunder, the Cleaving Thunder. Like, it goes through all of them, and each of them has their own little... the mythos in their stuff.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to double-check about the boat puzzle, see if I see it.
It's one puzzle. It's, like, one random puzzle. It killed me one time. I think I got stuck or something like that and had to, like, reload my checkpoint and had to do it again. It's just, like, this, like, another, like, why... It's like somebody had a random thought develop it, and you're like, just throw it in there.
Oh, God, yes, I think I remember that. You're down in, like, you have to climb down to it, pull out a cork, and let the whole thing fill with water. Remember that, and I do remember being annoyed by that, yeah. Because mm-hmm. I just saw a brief picture of it. I do remember kind of being like, ugh, when we finally got to it. But then, at the end of that chapter, there's another, because that's like a mini-boss. That's why that's not a big fight, the Sadatame.
The big fight is the Sanjuro.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to.
The Sanjuro boss, which I forget why you would fight your old master. I'm sure that, do they have a discussion or anything? I don't remember any lines he says that why you would end up fighting, you know.
Yeah, I don't know the whole mythos, but it's like a, he let down his village. Like, they're still kind of like...
So he still blames him?
Even in the after, well, because I think it has a lot to do, like, he's like, you were told, this. I think this is honor or duty, because he's like, you were told to protect the village at all cost, and yet you ran away. And he didn't run away, but you were tricked in away instead of staying where you were supposed to stay to protect the people, so he was kind of blaming him, too.
Yeah, he could be smarter than that. I don't know. I don't remember. I think there'd be more to it than that.
Well, he says the game calls it the rage version, so I think he is mad. The rage version of Sanjuro. So I think it's not necessarily him being logical. It's just all the rage. And again, it may not be Sanjuro. It may be Hiroki's perception of what his master would think of him.
Oh, okay.
And the rage at himself type is what it may be.
Still, Sanjuro would have had the willpower to retain his...
Yeah. So like, again, himself. I don't know if that was actually Sanjuro or the perception of what Hiroki thinks Sanjuro would do to me being in the afterlife.
I wonder if that was that even Sadatame then?
Again, it might not be.
All this could be him reflecting
his trial,
because we're getting to the thing that we're the last Yomi boss,
mm-hmm.
which we'll get to in a second. But like next after the Sanjuro fight, I wrote one more Yomi chapter. The game is way past overstaying its welcome by now.
Yeah, it does draw out.
Last chapter, and I have no notes for the next chapter besides getting to the boss. And the way we're talking, the last Yomi boss you fight is a shadow of yourself, which is.
Yeah.
Classic,
you know, Shadow Link.
Link. Yeah, you fight a shadow of yourself, and you're given that final choice between love and duty and whatever. I didn't write why, but I chose love, and I think that's like maybe the weakest, because there's not a whole lot about the girl in the game. You know, occasional talk scene, and you are like chasing her spirit, whatever, through like a lot. There's lots of in the chapter sequence where you're like her spirit's floating away, and you're like running after it, but it's like. There's just like not enough. Like the game's so short. There's not enough with them in the beginning to like for you to get tied to you like emotionally tied to their relationship or anything.
I chose duty.
Yeah.
Complete the game with the path of duty.
You would choose duty.
Yeah. I'm all about that duty.
D-O-O-T-Y.
Oh, it does say I found all the collectibles, so I did get all the collectibles.
Nice.
One cool thing about this final chapter, though, the chapter 6, is I visually. Loved it, because as you're getting closer to the end of your chapter, the land is breaking away and mm-hmm. it's becoming more closer to the spiritual
Yeah.
And so there's this howling wind that blows, and it causes the land to roll like a rope bridge. Do you remember that visual?
A little bit, yeah.
It was like really... And it was
something different's happening in Yomi.
Besides just running across and
up. There's a lot of Yomi, like, you end up running through, like, broken down...
It was broken down villages, and then it was like a, like, dilapidated, like, kind of great, not graveyard, but, like, just, you know, just dilapidated landscape. Dying landscape.
And it's not very mystical until that last chapter.
And that was really cool, though, because the wind would blow and the whole thing would... Mm-hmm. And it would, like, change on how hard the wind blew, and it would literally cause the ground to, like, roll under you. I thought that was really, really cool.
I finally see something cool out there, do you?
But
visually cool.
Yeah.
For Yomi, at least.
This is here... You mentioned you did an Indiana Jones thing. I specifically wrote here... Because it's an introduction of a new enemy type. It's called a general elite enemy. And this one, he says all this, you know, I'm going to murder you. You're never going to get past me. And I said, let's see, blah, blah, blah. I Indiana Jones this general elite enemy with my cannon and moved on. Because he says this whole spiel that he's, you know, he'll you know, show my skull to the enemies. And or he'll, I think it's like he'll drink from my skull or whatever. And I was just like... and moved on. I loved Indiana Jones and folks with my gun.
So I guess regardless of your choice, it kind of ends the same way. I'm guessing you end up back. You're in the final chapter now, and you're back alive. You're given what they call one last breath.
Mm.
Maybe it's part of some of the lore. Whoever you talk to that gives I forget who you're, some sort of spirit or god or whatever it was you talk to, they give you the one quote unquote one last breath. He says it like it's a thing.
Like, we're supposed to know what it is, but we are dumb Americans who don't know too much about it.
Yeah. But you're back at your home village, and it's just like, I guess timeline-wise, you're back where you got killed originally. Like, you're back, the whole village is on fire, and you're back there again, and you're running through, back through the burning buildings and stuff like that. This does lead to a nice big firework. The fire gets to, I guess there was a firework storage warehouse, and you do get to a kind of a cool visually spectacle of the fire getting to a building that explodes and like shoots fireworks all over the place, which still, even without color, obviously, because of the way it's designed and the lighting, looks really cool with everything explodes and all the fireworks go off. You know, they did that just for fun.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Okay, I think I was mistaken when you mentioned earlier about doing the arrow covers.
Yeah,
my notes say right here is where the fire arrows happen and they burn away your cover.
Okay,
so that happened here instead of earlier in the game. Okay, so my bad. But that also leads to the fire. I call it the fire runs through the streets. You run through the roofs and then big explosion at the end.
Yeah, the explosion is really nice.
That was really. I think I failed my first time. I got it my second try, but I wasn't because I
the buildings are collapsing.
You gotta grab a collectible. In the middle of it too, there's something you have to like take a left, grab a collectible real quick, and then run back. And I died getting the collectible. But that was a really cool scene because you're like booking it. I don't think are you fighting anybody.
I think the whole point of running.
The whole point is just a run, not running gun, but just a run platform thing to like because you're have to like run, jump across the rooftops as it's like burning behind you. It's all visually just a very visual spectacle, and I loved it. I did really enjoy pretty that cool. scene.
Yeah. All leading up to the final boss, which took me multiple attempts to a point where I was like, I might not be able to beat this. I think I got on my third try, maybe second or third try. It was tough enough that I was kind of worried because it's like a multi. Is it two fights or three fights in a row? I know it's you fight Kageyuro, whatever his name is, and then he turns into his demon form, and you fight that form too. But you have to fight that in one sequence of a fight.
I think it's the I'm double checking here against the guy, but I think it's
just the two tier fight.
You fight Kageyuro is pretty easy in the first phase. There are two phases, yeah. It's his regular phase, and then he turns into the second phase,
mm-hmm.
which is the demon version of himself.
Yeah, I remember them both being pretty standard.
Yeah,
tough. Like obviously much harder than anything else because this is the guy who killed you in the beginning of the game. Fairly standard. I mean, I was using as much cannon as I could get in, and I think what pissed me off was demon version starts summoning help.
Yeah,
and I was like, this is like, why can't a final boss be competent enough to not spawn ads? You know what I mean?
Yeah, adds a couple Nothing of supernatural more. Ones.
So disappointed that your last boss can't be competent enough to fight you on its own. You know? Yeah, I did beat it. I'm assuming you beat it as well.
But the other thing here too is we didn't really talk about it,
mm-hmm.
but as you're going through with your collectibles and stuff, you are unlocking new combos. You get like a stunner combo and a shield breaker combo.
I mentioned earlier that you do unlock other skills, but I forgot how you...
It's just different inputs. It's like
How do you what triggers the unlocking of the other kind of attacks? There's not experience and levels up. Is it?
I think it's story based or collectible based.
Okay, I don't remember. I did the attack parry as much as I could, and then the finishers.
Yeah,
it's kind of where I was right.
Because it says that. Because I'm looking at the thing, he says he's much easier now than he is in chapter 3. Because you have access to the stun and the deflect and stuff like that. And it says it makes it much, especially with it being a one-on-one, it says that first one's much easier. And then the second one is difficult just because he is a little faster and he summons adds. But I forget how many tries it took me, but I'm sure I'm positive I didn't do it in one try just because I know me. But I did win.
Yeah. Do you remember how the ending plays out? I do not. I didn't write any notes for how the ending plays out.
It's different. It just depends on
Do you read anything about the different endings? Or?
I do have them. I thought I had them here. Oh, basically, okay, so.
He doesn't get to, doesn't get to live. That's what the point of the one last breath is, to complete his task. Like, you don't get to.
Yeah.
Nobody gets to just survive. Like, that thing where completing your trek. You know, same thing with Kagero, whatever. I'm assuming he doesn't get to, like, if he was able to complete his task, he doesn't get to live. You don't get to escape. You know me? I'm guessing. I'm loosely guessing that's how it plays out. Yeah,
his thing confuses me as to if he was able to come and survive for 10 years. Because you come back within 10 minutes of the real world time, you're dead on the ground, and your village is still burning. It's not like the following morning, it's the same night.
Yeah.
So it's confusing on how his thing went and he's still alive. But also could just be on like his journey. Because what you do, your three choices, you get love, and so you get to... just go. You get with Akiko, and you know you're together forever in the afterlife. You go to the version. It's not Yomi. You go to the next phase. And then if you choose duty, you actually, I think you stay alive.
Do you get to stay alive? I don't know if you get to stay alive.
God,
should have wrote more down about it. The point is, I mean, I didn't write anything down because at this point I was like well done with the game, you know. I don't see it much as a, if they were going for like a samurai epic. Okay, I don't even know if I would even like this so much as a movie. It's like not, I hate to say generic as a mean word, but it is kind of a, you know, samurai, you know, fails his people and has to go get revenge. And I guess the trekking through Yomi part should be the more interesting part, but all of this seemed a little kind of by rote to me, if that makes sense, for like a samurai story of sorts. Besides the ones that normally don't, normal samurais won't go to the demon world. I guess they'll just go kill the guy who burned the village. This adds that little supernatural layer, but doesn't do enough of the supernatural to make it super interesting.
Yeah, it's just that's all there really is to it. It's just because you do have the three different endings, but they're kind of one of the things that kept us from doing it is you don't make that choice in the final chapter. You make it at the end of chapter 6, so you'd have to replay through chapter 6 three times.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't want to do that, especially if I'm not going to already get the 1K. Yeah.
So I only got 12. I didn't write down which ones, but I got 12 of the 28 achievements. I had no intention of getting a lot of achievements in this.
I got 13 of 28. I guarantee the one I got you didn't was probably the collectibles.
Yeah, so there's a big gap there and stuff we didn't get. My playtime was... I'm guessing, I don't know if I rounded it at all, but I got 5 hours, which is kind of what the guy said, which is kind of interesting. He wanted a 5-hour experience. I had 5 hours.
Where'd it go? I have 7 hours, 18 minutes is what I did. So real quick, I do have a breakdown here of each of the endings.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see here. Scroll. Okay, by choosing love, Hiroki returns to Yomi briefly to fight Kagryo. One final time. After beating him with the power of Yomi, Hiroki returns to Yomi to be with his beloved Akiko for the rest of eternity. He's rewarded with love.
But not alive.
He's rewarded with love everlasting.
Which doesn't... Again, I'm beating a dead horse. There's not enough story for that to be touching in any kind of way.
Yeah. So duty is the one that I chose. It says, after you beat Kaguya and best him, the game skips ahead... several years to where Hiroki is an old man now training a young boy as his student, similar to how the game begins.
So he does. So you do get to live.
So you do get to live.
Okay, weird.
And then the other one is that
ending is also open-ended and kind of unsatisfactory.
The other one here is that you can refuse the gift that they're offering and surrender to your rage, which is the hatred ending. One last time, slay him before donning, you slay him and then don his armor and usurp his position and become the leader of the Kagori army. And it says that Hiroki becomes the very thing he swore to destroy and lives the rest of his life as a killer. I was like, why would you? It seems like the worst ending.
Doesn't seem like he would do that.
Yeah, that's the dark ending and the bad ending. And then, of course, the secret ending for if you manage to beat him at the end of chapter 3, you find out that I think that one still kind of falls closer to the lines of duty, which is the one I felt was more mm-hmm. for anything. Because the hidden ending is if you beat him, you run past him or whatever, and you find that Akiko is dead, which he had already killed her. And so you bury her, and then you live the rest of your life protecting the village in her name, which is duty. So even the secret ending is still good. So I think duty is the ending, is the best, is the
again,
more, is the canon ending.
You had so much more writing focused on making that a better story instead of writing to other endings that just don't have any meaning to them.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
You got anything else you want to say before we drop our little meaningless fun ratings?
You go first, and then
mine's not nice and simple. I liked it okay enough. It does. I hate when short movies and short games feel interminable.
Yeah,
when oh my god, why is this taking so long? The game is 5 hours, and it felt so much longer. I enjoyed a lot of aspects. The art, the combat actually was okay. The story's kind of hit or miss. I'd say we played it, not a Game Pass podcast, but we played this one when this was leaving Game Pass. If it was still on Game Pass, I would say it's probably worth your little 5-hour playthrough just to kind of enjoy the spectacle of the way it looks and stuff like that. But I wouldn't pay too much money for a 5-hour experience or anything like that. So with that said, I'm going to give this 6 black and white samurai dioramas.
For me, like I said, I agree with you wholeheartedly. If I'm playing a short game, I'm just like, is this over yet? Especially when the TA is like, oh, you should be able to beat this and under.
It's kind of like the difference is, okay, 5 hours of this. Now, the games aren't comparable. 5 hours of this, and I'm just like, whoa, come on, get over with. 120 hours of Death Stranding, and I was like, are there any more guys I can deliver to?
Can I? You want some deliveries?
Any more roads I can make? Is there anything else? Like 120 hours, I think I've done everything, but I would like something else to do. That's crazy that you can make games the same way we thought we, and the same thing. You can watch an hour and a half movie that feels like it's 6 hours, and then you can watch a 3-hour movie that feels like an hour. Like really stuff really good flies by, and stuff that's really bad can. We've watched hour and a half movies that just feels like, is this movie ever going to end?
It's crazy. I don't know. Again, time's relative, and it's weird how it works.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time on this and our other podcasts as well. It's just crazy that something like this can feel.
Or heck, like just today being alive, we talked about it because we left and did some errands and came back and had lunch, and it was already like 2:00 before we sat down to record this, and we're like, if I was working today, it would just now be 7:00 in the morning. I would just now be like clocking in, and it would be 7:05.
Yeah,
because just time sucks.
But you got Fisher.
But for me, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, they should have trimmed out or at least made Yomi more unique in and of itself, because like the first two chapters trick you because they're very quick. Chapter 1 and chapter 2 are very fast,
mm-hmm.
and chapter 3 is kind of quick too. But then,
we're harping on it. Every screen in the first couple of chapters, I said before, people know video games aren't art. Every screen you run into in the first couple of chapters is an art piece.
Yeah,
people would take you would travel somebody's house, and you have a picture of this video game on a wall, and like, oh, look at that Japanese art you have. That's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Oh yeah, 100%.
They had to have pulled these art. They've seen it. That's their reference. It's like they've seen beautiful black and white Japanese art that looks like this. That's what the game looks like until you get to Yomi.
then it's just much more dark than anything. Lots of heavy darkness, which makes sense for the world of darkness.
Yeah.
But so for me, like I said, I agree pretty much wholeheartedly in with everything that you said.
Yeah.
And I don't really have too much more to add, so to keep from, you know, just running in circles, I too, I give it 6 Indiana Jonesing some dead samurais out of 10.
That's good.
Because it's funny that we both mentioned different parts of the game of Indiana Jonesing.
Indiana Jonesing somebody. very cool. All right, so that's the end of this trek through Yomi, but we're not done with Yomi yet.
Do we talk about the pricing of the game?
No. I mean, we played on Game Pass.
Yeah.
It's also off Game Pass.
But you just
ruined my setup. I gave you a great setup to announce your next game. You had to trample all over it and ruin it for everybody.
So I wasn't ready to move on yet. I just wanted to talk because, like, the game is only $20. That's not bad. Especially if
that's a lot for 5 hours, I feel like.
But, I mean, if you plan on trying to get all the endings and you play...
Yes, $10. Come on, $10. $9.99, this game would be fine for five hours. You know, even if you run through multiple times, fine. You know, get your 6, 7, 8 hours out of it for $10. People just got to figure out the... I know it's... Listen to other podcasts talk about it's really tough to...
Put a price on your own work.
On your work and your involvement and a player's the value of their time compared to how much time they spend with something. Because then again, you would be like, oh, why didn't I pay $300 for Death Stranding? Because if I paid $100, you know, what's the math of that? Why shouldn't I have paid so much more
than $60
for Death Stranding? You know, when I, you know, and I complained about paying $20 for this, and you know, that's a whole different can of worms. But $20 seems high. Yeah. Sure, it'd be on sale all the time.
Go ahead and reset us up.
Now, since Blake done jacked it up, go ahead and leave all that crap in, Brian, because why not? Since we are coming to the end of this trek to Yomi, we're still not done with Yomi. Doesn't sound as good the second time you say it. So what's our next game, Blake, and why are we still talking about Yomi?
So the next game is we were doing it just because it's kind of back-to-back, it's kind of cool, and it's a completely different genre.
Completely different.
Of game. But the game we'll be talking about next is called Undernauts, The Labyrinth of Yomi.
Yeah, not as good the second time.
Da-da-dun, da-da-dun.
With all that said, we're going to wrap this bad boy up. I don't have my thing pulled up. With all that said, we're going to wrap this thing up. I want to give thanks to Jared and the guys of Emerge for letting us use Letting Go for the intro to our podcast. It rocks. Obviously, it's the best part of the podcast. Give these guys a follow. They've been posting about new music and stuff like that. No new music has been released, but you see them. Jared likes to post videos of him fiddling around on the guitar a little bit and kind of you get some early listen of some of the new guitar riffs and stuff like that coming. So fingers crossed. Obviously, we'll be having some more new music very soon. Catch them if you're local in the Tennessee area or anything like that, or anywhere around in Atlanta and stuff like that. Follow them because they've been, you know, doing a lot of really cool shows with some other cool bands. You should definitely get a chance to see them. We've seen them Emerge live 3, 4, 5. I don't know how many freaking times we've seen them live now, but go see Emerge live. They're obviously great live, and they're all really, really great guys. I want to give thanks to Mlad Markovic, aka Devious Pixel, for the art for this podcast and art for other podcasts or stuff like that. If you ever need any art for anything and you like the style, he's not. So if you don't like the style that we're choosing for our podcast, he's still an artist. He can do anything.
Yeah.
Basically, he's not locked into click on his link in here and go see what other stuff he does. He's not locked into just the way he's not just the lock stock artist. Like obviously he was an artist years before, you know, years his whole life before he met us. So, go give him some work. You need some art for something, hit him up.
One cool thing he does do, he actually has a whole separate Instagram account for it where he designs and draws a fake Mon combinations of like created Pokemon combined. So he does. And he's like, that has a lot more views than my actual artwork. It makes me sad because we talked about it on the,
Pokemon's just so popular.
Yeah, we hung out with him on the podcast episode 70, 80. 70,
something like that.
But yeah.
Last but not least, I want to thank Brian for sticking with the editing for this podcast. I definitely appreciate that. It gives me time to edit the other podcast and play more video games so that I can get more content for this podcast. If you want to hear more of us or see more of us and hear a little bit of Brian until he's on the podcast again, come to our Twitch streams at twitch.tv/2smokingcontrollers, where, as Blake mentioned in the beginning, we are doing a run-through of Dark Souls 2. With to medium success so far. We have beaten the two out of three of us have beaten the first boss, right? Or all three of us?
I think we all three beat it.
We all three. So
we beat mine the first time, and the second time we both beat the first boss, and then we beat the pursuer with me, didn't beat it with you. We ended on a failure because we
'cause he slaughtered me.
He slaughtered you.
Yeah. Okay. No big deal.
It's all your fault. You suck.
Coming out and talk Dark Souls and other kind of video games with us, we'll get back in those streams. It's too hard. I know people are like, to be a streamer, you got to have a solid set schedule. Some of us have lives outside of video games, even though we kind of don't want to. So it's really hard for us to find a specific day. Me, Blake, and Brian all have different job schedules. We've all got different lives. Me and Brian have kids. So it's just like, we're complaining. But anyway, if you just follow us on the social media, follow us on Twitch, you will get notified when we go live. It's usually at least one time a week. We wish we could do more. That's the best we can do. So follow us, come hang out, get a little insight to that. Because when we're in an episode with Brian where we talk about one of the games we've played together for Three Spoken Controllers. So with that, we're pretty much done here, and I will let Blake wrap this up. And don't forget your other stuff.
My other stuff is hold on, it's a thing that I have, and I'm supposed to do. I have a picture of it somewhere.
It's okay. Two things. You can't remember?
No. Right, so, a little bit of self-promotion is we have a brother podcast, and it is called Suspension of Disbelief, and it is
Suspension? You don't even know the name?
Suspension of Disbelief. That's what I said.
Suspension?
What'd I say?
Suspicion.
Oh. Suspension of
Disbelief. Way to sell it.
Suspension of Disbelief, and it's with our good buddy Steve Wedding. And it's just a movie podcast that spawned from this one because I was trying to sell people on watching movies or TV show without spoiling anything. We now have a full spoiler podcast where me and Steve we take turns semi-surprising one another with a movie, and we don't discuss it until we record. That way our opinions don't influence the other ones, and so everything we talk about is the first time either one of us is hearing that opinion. So it gets better, not shock value, but more interesting live interactions with one another. And I also have a short story called They Come This Night, and it's a short story that if you're a member of the Kindle Unlimited, it's already in your library for free. If not, it's just $1. Please go check that out. I'm very, very proud of it, actually. Mm-hmm. Feel free to, I don't ask it for the podcast, but if you don't mind, please feel free to review and rate that, because that helps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I don't really have anything else. And I want to wish everybody a good evening and good night.